Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, we're going to take an in-depth look at artificial intelligence. This is the first of a series. The next in the series will be transhumanism. And what we are speaking about already exists. This is not the future. And it concerns me. And as we go through three separate speakers, each defining for us what it means for artificial intelligence, they emphasize the importance of artificial intelligence, but also they show us the downside, especially when the largest investments from Google and others are to weaponize artificial intelligence. I'll explain that as we go. And during the program, if you would like to share your thoughts, I'm going to be taking calls at 888-874-4888 on our talkback line. But before we get there, if time permits, I want to share a commentary by Chris Hedges, American the Failed State, from Truthdig, also a commentary, a brief commentary, that is addressing many of your questions. I asked recently, after we aired a few clips of this young gentleman who is leading a new movement with a hashtag walk back and or walk away, and he's talking about being a lifetime Democrat and liberal, and he's walking away from it. Now, I played the longer clips because I wanted people to hear that the people who were interviewing him were almost all, in fact, they were all conservatives. And some would be supporting principles that I know I don't support, but I also believe in freedom of speech. And I also believe in not censoring people. Let them have their say. My concern with this young man, Brandon, is that I do not believe that he understands how he's being played by the right and conservative movement. So he's trying to get people to go from the liberal movement to the conservative movement. And that's unfortunate. My hope is that he comes to a place where he understands that freeing yourself from a movement means you now have an opportunity to take a careful and honest look at not just the movement you're freeing yourself from, but other movements, and see, are they any better? In my personal opinion, both the corporate Democrat and the corporate Republican movements are virtually the same in that they do not help make it a better world. They do not empower us in a healthy way. They're based on fear, hatred, anger, animosity, and bias. They're not addressing any of the important issues. But with over 100 million Americans having decided to leave both parties and become independents, then there is a vacuum. Could you imagine if you got at least half those people, or 50 million, to work together towards common goals of looking at society as an issue that we all should be working towards bettering? Here are some of your thoughts. This is from Kevin Traynor. You have to define progressive. We don't even know what a republic is. Where we are a constitutional republic, we are not a democracy. We were never meant to be a democracy. Democracy is not a part of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. And this is important because if you're starting off with the wrong construct, then even with the best of ideals, you're not going to get to the right place. Progressive simply means this, that growing up in a community that was very conservative and heavily Republican, but my family, just a working class family, my mother was very liberal, but she had very traditional values. The importance of respect for elders, civility, you can disagree, but don't be disagreeable. You know, you're not going to gain something by fighting people. You gain something when you can sit and listen to someone. And she was the first person in my life who said, listen unconditionally. meaning don't judge them before they've had their say. Wait till they say what is on their mind, then see whether or not it's reasonable or not. And if it's not reasonable, don't accept it. And so that's how I've grown up. Very liberal, but coming from a conservative background as far as family values, manners, morals, honoring your word, looking at your community. I'll just tell you how that works. In my community, we did not have a YMCA. It had closed because of lack of support and funding. So a group of us young guys went to a woman who was the wealthiest woman in the state of West Virginia, who happened to live, Mrs. Harris, who lived in Parkersburg, and we told her, young men and women have no place to go. There was a YWCA, but no YMCA. And so she bought a house down on 6th Street. And we then all put on our work belts and went in and gutted it and built it into a boys' club, the first boys' club in Parkersburg's history. And we all felt good because it was a community effort. We did something for the common good of everyone. We built a gym, very basic gym in a back of a garage, but there was no gym. And so every day people would come by and they could work out in the gym. It was small, but it was something. And we would never think of, tearing up what was the public park that we all enjoyed. So those are the kind of values that I'm sure many of you also grew up with. And our great grandparents and our grandparents and our parents were the last generation to grow up through the Great Depression and the Second World War, and they had those values. We had the benefit of learning from them. The trouble is today, a lot of people don't have these values. And a lot of people, especially in the area where politics is everything and control and power, and how you can then control the budgets and how your friends and important places can get no-bid contracts, that's what dominates today. So progressive simply means looking for the truth wherever it is, finding pieces of the truth and putting them together so you have a mosaic without identifying as an ideology. So I'm simply a truth seeker. That's all I am. I'm not a part of any ideology. And my truth means it's universal, which means that if something is good, it must be good for everyone. Today, the Democrats do what's good for the Democrats, Republicans what's good for the Republicans, though it's only people in power that benefit, and the rest of the people suffer and are then lied to. This is from Donald Klepak. One thing is for sure, Gary, it's not the Democratic Party. That party was drifting towards hate since Trump became president. In the last 2 weeks, it's become an avalanche of hate. Roger Mark, betrayal is such an awful word. However, it's the first word that comes to mind when I think about the Democratic Party as it stands today. It was a good party. I was a good, loyal voting member for 35 years. After the malfeasance committed against Bernie Sanders in 2016, no more. By the way, Roger, you're not alone. A lot of people, older and younger, who believe that many of the principles that Bernie Sanders was offering was better than anything Hillary Clinton or Trump offered, they left too because they saw that it's an illusion that you can take socialism and bring it into the Democratic Party. It's never going to happen. Virginia Farigano, I'm ready, walk progressive. I think we've been at this for many years now. I'm glad you found a name and a place for it. Will you be running? Nope. This is from George Castero. Because we live in a corrupt society run by corporations, not government, the government is on the pad for lots of dollars, and that affects all of us in terms of lifestyle, brainwashing, health medicine, so-called food, weather. Ciro Laris, walking away from something is relatively easy. It's the lack of options of what to walk towards that makes strategic sense. That's difficult. I reject lifestyle activism alone as adequate to bring about sweeping reform, hence the need for strategy. Well said, Spiro. I'll share this. understanding that someone somewhere has to begin something for us to pay attention to it. The March Against Monsanto was actually started by one of the listeners of this audience. Today it has millions of people. And because of that, we can now take articles that we've written, documentaries such as Seeds of Death, which is played more than 80 times on Colorado Public Television, and we share this with each other. Because of people whose children were injured from vaccines, that they trusted the doctor, and now they were lied to, they were abused, and no one apologized, now they've formed groups. There's probably 300 to 400 groups of vaccine-affected parents. Now we're writing articles. Richard Gale and myself have written over 51 articles just on the subject of vaccines and produced over 5 documentaries, the latest being The Silent Epidemic was last year or year before, and right now it's a deadly deception. So we produce articles, investigative reports, documentaries, radio broadcasts, guests, and then people as individuals can absorb that. If it's reasonable, they use it. If not, they let it go. And then they find other people that they can network with. So it is the finding the truth for yourself and sharing that with other people who are also seeking. And that means when we have a rally, like when we went to Washington, D.C., there were 8,000 people from this radio audience who marched over 10 days to protest genetic engineering. And thank goodness we had Dr. Broner's company who helped support that. But people got out and did something together. It wasn't one individual. It was a group. So we're looking at these 100 million people as a group, but we're giving them a lot of different ideas. Any one of these ideas that they latch onto becomes a whole movement, a progressive movement, to forgive student debt, to completely challenge Citizens United, to take all money and financing out of elections, to demilitarize the world, to stop regime change, to hold those who've engaged in illegal acts against humanity, hold them accountable, to not elect people simply because we have historically been a Democrat or Republican, move away from those two parties and start honoring the Peace Party and the Justice Party and the Green Party. We should have dozens of parties that work together instead of isolating themselves from one another. That is still possible. That's what we're doing now. So all the 780 articles we've written, over 100 documentaries we've done, or 22,000 broadcasts, or 5,000 lectures, those are not wasted because we've archived them. So now when a person finally walks away from a Republican or Democratic movement, you're not walking away from the best that you were or the best that you found. Keep the most important liberal principles of caring for everyone. Never engage in discrimination or bias. Look for equality in all things between men and women and any other gender. Respect the needs of those who have less. Look for those who are the poorest to help first. These are the things that liberal principles mean. And also conservative, the best of your conservative values, keep those. Just discard the party and its politics because it's become infected and corrupted, and we don't need that. This is from Sharon Ann Fitzpatrick on Walk Progressive. That's our new hashtag, Walk Progressive. And we have articles, documentaries, every day putting new up there to help inspire you, to show you how much information is available that you may not have been aware of, that's been there, and we're adding to it. I think of myself as a progressive except for one difference. I believe it's wrong for a mother to abort her baby. Everyone who makes it to the womb deserves a chance to come into this world. At this time, women have birth control pills or contraceptives, or an abortion never need occur. Okay? Historically, think of how many women have been attacked who've been against abortion by the left because they hold very strong principles in freedom of choosing an abortion and those who are pro-life. You don't have to disrespect someone because you hold a different point of view. So if the real spiritual feminists now step forward and we hear from their wisdom, then we would respect women who differ from the what the image, artificial image, of what an ideal woman in this society should be from the liberal point of view. And that's part of the body politics, the identity politics that has to change. So agree or disagree on any given point, vaccines, you can agree or disagree. But then look at the science. Don't just keep it emotional. If you look at the science, the liberal community has rejected the investigating 9/11 for the truth. Now, not on my program, we've never told you who was responsible for doing what. What we've said is the official version has been completely deconstructed by more than 2,000 scientists and engineers. So it's time for an objective, independent evaluation of the truth. They reject that out of hand. They reject that the CIA, the National Security Agency, Homeland Security are in any way a part of the deep state or corrupted. In fact, they've been the biggest cheerleaders for Comey and also for others in the FBI who have a long history of bias and politicizing and militarizing their positions. They don't agree with you if you're a parent. They think you're a loon if you don't vaccinate. And they don't even support the challenge against genetically engineered foods. So there's a lot of issues on health that the liberal community could learn from if they chose to. And there's an awful lot on the conservative side that they could learn from if they chose to. So our goal is to ask people, walk away from both parties. Educate yourself, and then hopefully either stay independent or become a part of a progressive movement where we can get people into positions to make social change, political change, and take back our power. So those are just some of your thoughts. And a few words before we go to our first panelist talking about the artificial intelligence. Someone stopped me on the street and says, Gary, I'm a liberal and I listen to your show, but can you be more specific about what you feel the liberals have done? I know what I know your position on Trump, you don't like him. I know your position on how cold and ruthless the Republicans are and the conservatives in government. You don't even talk about them because you hold them in such disdain. But what about the liberals? Where is it? Okay, let me give you some specifics. The liberal community, I'm talking about the corporate liberal community, like the Clintons and Obama, they continue to support and fund the Patriot Act. They consistently vote in favor for military budget increases. They permitted the National Defense Authorization Act to go forward with strong opposition that they disallowed. They've made absolutely no effort to change our drone program and the executive assassination policy that allows the president to kill whoever he wants. They have refused to open any investigation on the truth behind 9/11. They have not pushed with any effort to really understand the war on terror, because if they did, then you would have to ask, why did Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, both support funding terrorist organizations like the White Helmets, or illegally taking Gaddafi's arms and shipping them secretly into Turkey to go into Syria or directly into Syria? Syria is a sovereign nation. And from Wikipedia, or WikiLeaks, I should say, we now know that there was no legitimate reason to destroy a country and its people. Why has the left not once held Hillary Clinton, her husband Bill Clinton, and the leadership of the Democratic Party, including Barack Obama, responsible for genocide against an innocent civilian population in Libya, making it a failed state where slaves are now sold in the open market? They act as if that doesn't matter. It does. Hillary Clinton then engaging in a coup in Honduras, supporting a dictatorship. They say that doesn't matter. Refusing to look at the truth that the State Department and Hillary Clinton and Gloria Nuland, who ran the Russian desk, were arming and supporting terrorists there. So, and besides, there's been no congressional outrage on the left about any of these things. And also, why have they not called out Israel on its war crimes in Gaza and human rights abuse in the West Bank? They have not. There's no formidable challenge to U.S.-Saudi relations, and yet Saudi Arabia is engaged in genocide right now against the poorest people in the Middle East, and that's in Yemen. And there's over 18 million people in Yemen who are at risk of starving to death, with over 100,000 cases of cholera, and it's pure genocide. The United States has boots on the ground, and we're funding that. There has also been no effort whatsoever by the left, including Bernie Sanders, to downsize the military budget or overreach around the world and close bases. They've been mute on renewing nuclear weapons buildup. And yet Obama promised $1.5 trillion new nuclear weapons. They have been mute and said nothing about surveillance and spying and warrantless wiretapping and asset confiscation. And both liberals and conservatives and federal legislators have to agree on a progressive issue, but they never do. They simply never do. They refuse to engage in finance reform within election campaigning. They still allow Citizens United to be in place. They refuse to go after the GMO manufacturers. They've refused to bring down the prices of prescription drugs. They have refused to support universal health care. They've refused to support prison reform. They've refused to stop the war on drugs, which is just a gigantic fiasco. They continue to accept money from the private prison systems. And so they refuse to really go after the major polluters because they receive money from them. And there's been absolutely no outrage by the corporate left in backing out of international treaties and agreements like NAFTA and CAFTA and others, where there's been human rights abuses. And there's been no effort to improve laws to protect whistleblowers. In fact, just the opposite. It was under Clinton and Obama that more whistleblowers were prosecuted than all the other presidents in America combined. They have refused to tackle education reform. They still supported the charters and private schools. There was no attempt to reverse Bush's bankruptcy laws, and there was no serious attempt to review and change subsidy policies towards the worst corporations and polluting unhealthy industries. They took money, so they supported them. Now, those are very specific claims as to why you should walk away from the corporate Democrats and also walk away from the corporate Republicans and walk towards independent thinking, or at the very least, take a look at what we're doing in the progressive movement to address all these issues. I'm Gary Nall. Those are my thoughts. Now we're going to go to our first panelist here. And again, the whole idea of what we are doing is we're going to look at three different people who have ideas about what could go wrong with artificial intelligence. And as you will see, a lot can go wrong. And we're not addressing this at all. The mainstream media is not looking at the weaponization of artificial intelligence and how artificial intelligence cannot be controlled. Once you create it, once you create any system that can create for itself, you no longer have any way of stopping it. Let's hear our first speaker.
Is about something that is smarter than you are. Artificial intelligence. In fact, a lot of people who work in artificial intelligence believe that artificial intelligence is 1,000 times smarter than we are. It will be moving at speeds that are 100,000 times as fast as we think, and it will be digesting information and data 1,000,000 times more than we can. What is artificial intelligence? There are a lot of confused ideas about this outside in the world. But the answer is very simple. It's one sentence. Artificial intelligence is software that writes itself. It writes its own updates. It renews itself. We normally tend to think of software as stuff that we created and that we wrote, and the machines do what we tell them to do, and we own it. This is not any longer true. It writes itself at speeds that we can hardly comprehend, and people who write it know that you can't take it apart again and figure out what it's done. It writes independently, autonomously. It develops its own way of thinking. And there are dangers associated with that. So a lot of people ask, when is it going to happen? When is artificial intelligence going to be smarter than us people? Some people say 50 years. Some say 30 years. Some say 5 years. I say it already has surpassed us in many areas of our society. Let's take, for example, some examples from right here and now. And I apparently have to point this. Goes. Okay. The examples that we're going to talk about are not science fiction. They're not visions. They aren't things that are going to happen at some point. They are things that exist today, for example, in the stock markets, whether Frankfurt or Tokyo or New York or London. The people you see down there working on your TV show and you're watching it, they're more or less extras in a movie. They aren't doing the big moving. The big moving is being done by high-frequency computers. They move so fast, they make, in milliseconds, billion-dollar business. Computers have far succeeded what we can do. In fact, I did a film once about a company that moved 5 blocks closer to the Frankfurt stock market because, at the speed of light on glass cable, they saved so much time getting closer to the computers at the Frankfurter Stock Exchange. That will give you an idea of how fast they think and how helpless we as human beings are. You may remember the old pictures of the stockbrokers with 5 telephones in each hand running back and forth, writing things on paper. That was way before yesterday. Computers have taken over this very, very important part of our society, a heart of our financial community. And no one understands exactly how these algorithms function. They used to understand them, but they've been improved by artificial intelligence. I don't know how many people flew in today, but if you were sitting in an airplane, you probably had 30 different tariffs and prices in your cabin because the pricing is well done. Same is true of hotels, by machines that are collecting global information, making decisions within split seconds what the price of that airplane seat or that hotel room is going to be. And where it's most critical of all, we're talking about life and death, is in medicine. Computers are better than we are as human beings in several areas already today. We're talking about here and now. This is not science fiction. I'm speaking next week at the Universitätsklinikum in Essen. And their radiologists, who are supposed to be some of the best radiologists in Germany, they say that a computer can recognize a tumor on an MT or an CT, MRT or CT, faster and better and more precisely than a human being can. It's picture analysis, and it's done very well by computers, especially in medicine where it saves lives. Now, the robots are getting better and better. They're looking cute. They have these big baby eyes, the sweet way of looking at you. They can examine your facial expression and adjust theirs. But don't be fooled by robots, even when they get warm skin and even when they get perfume and they start smelling like us and getting really interesting, they are still machines. They have no warm blood in them, there's no sex in them, they have no mortality. They're cold code lines. And they shouldn't be misunderstood. Now, I want you to understand what the power of artificial intelligence is, and I have 2 examples. One is surveillance cameras. Everybody knows, you know, that we're being watched by cameras everywhere, and most people think surveillance is a camera there, and it's me down here, and it's watching me. One person, one camera. Well, that's because we're stupid. That's the way we comprehend the surveillance. One camera, one person. We can't comprehend it when it goes beyond that.
This image was taken 17,500 feet above Quantico, Virginia, and covers 15 square miles.
This whole image is at a very, very fine resolution. So if we wanted to know what is going on in any spot along this image, say near this building at this intersection, everything that is a moving object is being automatically tracked. The color boxes represent that the computer has recognized the moving objects. You can see individuals crossing the street. You can see individuals walking in parking lots. there's actually enough resolution to be able to see the people waving their arms or walking around, what kind of clothes they wear.
Unlike the Predator camera that limits field of view, Argus melds together video from each of its 368 chips to create a 1.8 billion pixel video stream. This makes it possible to zoom in and still see tremendous detail.
And a million produces a million terabytes every day. That's a lot of data. And I'm telling you this because not that the sensors are modern and not that the photography is modern. Behind that is a brain or a cognitive intelligence. And that brain is in a position to analyze everybody down there. At the same time, in real time, they see where everyone is going. We can understand it when we reduce it to a single person, but we cannot understand it when you're talking about 100,000 people in a city, plus the vehicles, which you all recognize. Due to such systems, they have also redone facial recognition. You probably think facial recognition is from the front, but they've redone it to do it from the top because that's where the drones are. And they look at your ears, they look at the way you walk, they look at your head. That's modern facial recognition. So that's one idea. As a human being, we think of one camera and one person. this is a little of their things, that it's taking all the details, all the music up, and they record it so they can tell where that person was 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, what stores he visited, what his whole behavioral patterns are. That's all part of the analysis of Argus. These are called tennis balls in military and intelligence circles. It's a new secretive sensoric thing. A cruise missile will fly into a valley in Afghanistan, and this is especially important because the troops have left many of these areas, and it will drop literally thousands of these sensor packages, or these tennis balls. They're all packed in foam rubber. They record with cameras, they record with microphones, they record with seismic measurements, they record with Geiger counters, they record with chemical sensors that can look for chemical things. That's not the amazing part of it, and it's not the amazing part that they have a little signal that goes over here to the transmitter goes up to the satellite. Old technology, nothing special. But the special part of it is, behind that system, there's a fusion software that can combine the audio and the visual and the seismic and the chemical, all of these signals, and make sense of them and analyze on the ground what kind of troop movements they are, what are the kinds of vehicles they're using, what are they transporting, is there radioactivity in that. It takes all of these different pieces of information and turns it through fusion software into an understandable picture, which goes way beyond our vision. Artificial intelligence only works if you have huge data masses. Artificial intelligence only works if you have big data. But big data only works if you have artificial intelligence to make sense of it, because human beings can no longer sort and sift and order the huge volumes of data that we have collected. And thus, it is not surprising that the company that has the most information in the world, probably the most powerful country in the world, Google, is very interested in artificial intelligence and has been traveling around the world as a shopping queen, buying all the companies that are dealing with robotics. This is one of their robots. This is called Atlas. And they're buying artificial intelligence, all the artificial intelligence companies from around the world. Now, this is, if you ask Google, it's a peaceful robot, right? He doesn't have a gun. He doesn't throw atomic bombs. You know, he just walks around and stands there. But you may have seen the superimposer's DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. That is the research arm of the Pentagon. And then you see the video was made by Lockheed Martin, which is one of the most powerful and influential and richest weapons companies in the world. So why is the Pentagon investing this money? Why has Lockheed Martin taken over large aspects of the company? This guy's called Big Dog. He also belongs to Google, also DARPA financed, peaceful dog, right? Unless he gets caught on a maneuver of the United States Marines as part of a military unit. So these are not flower children. These are robots that have a function, and robots that have a function and an intelligence, and perhaps an intelligence that goes beyond us, are dangerous things. Now, that's a Predator drone. It was taken at a secretive United States Air Force base in New Mexico. Predator drones, you've seen, right? You've seen them on TV. You've seen them in the newspapers. They're old. They're 20 years old, the technology. This is, I mean, it looks very scary when the Spiegel and the ARD write modern technology and the guys in the joystick and killing people and Taliban and in Afghanistan far away. But that's what a modern drone looks like. This is not a Predator, this is a Pegasus. It's an X-47B. It's owned by the Navy. It's a jet-powered machine, not like a propeller-driven Predator. It goes 2,000 miles into enemy territory. It carries 2,000 kilos worth of explosives and is run by artificial intelligence. It starts alone, flies its mission alone, comes back alone, and here's the clue, it lands all by itself on an aircraft carrier. Talk to any pilot you've ever met. What's the most difficult landing area you can possibly imagine? They say it's an aircraft carrier. Short runway, things moving, very hard. This thinking drone can do it. But here are the two keys to Pegasus. Pegasus is invisible. Now, I'm not talking about stealth and being invisible to radar. I'm talking about invisible to the human eye. And you won't find this in any newspaper anywhere. It's invisible to the human eye because the bottom has an LED layer on it, and the top has cameras, which have been removed here in the picture, which film the sky, and they project in the bottom a live picture of the clouds up above the aircraft, and you can hardly see it. And they're responsible for a lot of these UFO sightings in Nevada near the testing areas. Jet engine propulsion, a reach of, oops, this is in German, of 2,000 miles, start and landing all by itself. Stealth is optical stealth. You can't see it. And the kill decision, which is required by United States law to be made by human beings. Human beings must be in the loop before someone is killed by a drone. But it's in the machine. And it doesn't need people. It can decide by itself whether or not it kills somebody. And the experts say it's going to make less mistakes and less collateral damage than the human decisions. The kill decision in robots in the air, in robots on the ground, in robots in the water or underwater, where there are also drones, is made by, or can be made by, machines. And in my book, I quote many official United States government documents which say, our goal is to have the kill decision made by them. And the problem is, artificial intelligence, sometimes they make mistakes. This is Talon. He's an automatic cannon. they can a lot of ammunition in that thing, and you can also put rockets on it. And it's in Iraq since 2007. At a demonstration with U.S. generals and experts, the damn thing got out of control and started pointing at the audience. And there was a Marine there, thank goodness, running across the field who tackled it like a football player and threw it on his side, and probably prevented a couple hundred people from being killed. Now, this wasn't reason enough to take a lucrative contract away from the company that built it, and it wasn't enough to take the Talon out of Iraq. It's just sort of off duty for the moment because, you know, there were some early stages of development, you know, that kind of problem. But don't underestimate artificial intelligence because it's getting better every day. And it's going to scare us. You know, I'm right at the right time where I say stop. Because I want to take a look now.
You're listening to Jay Tuck, T-U-C-K, in Hamburg, talking about artificial intelligence. Now we're going to go to Peter Haas, H-A-A-S, talking about the real reasons to be afraid of artificial intelligence.
Of the machines. Who here is scared of killer robots? I am. I used to work in UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles. And all I could think seeing these things is that someday somebody is going to strap a machine gun to these things and they're going to hunt me down in swarms. I work in robotics at Brown University, and I'm scared of robots. Actually, I'm kind of terrified. But can you blame me? Ever since I was a kid, all I've seen are movies that portray the ascendance of artificial intelligence and our inevitable conflict with it. 2001: A Space Odyssey, The Terminator, The Matrix, and the stories they tell are pretty scary. Rogue bands of humans running away from super intelligent machines. That scares me. From the hands, it seems like it scares you as well. I know it is scary to Elon Musk. But, you know, we have a little bit of time before the robots rise up. Robots like the PR2 that I have in my initiative, they can't even open the door yet. So in my mind, this discussion of super intelligent robots is a little bit of a distraction from something far more insidious that is going on with AI systems across the country. You see, right now, there are people, doctors, judges, accountants, who are getting information from an AI system and treating it as if it was information from a trusted colleague. It's this trust that bothers me. Not because of how often AI gets it wrong. AI researchers pride themselves in accuracy on results. It's how badly it gets it wrong when it makes a mistake that has me worried. These systems do not fail gracefully. So let's take a look at what this looks like. This is a dog that has been misidentified as a wolf by an AI algorithm. The researchers want to know, why did this particular husky get misidentified as a wolf? So they rewrote the algorithm to explain to them the parts of the picture it was paying attention to when the AI algorithm made its decision. In this picture, what do you think it paid attention to? What would you pay attention to? Maybe the eyes, maybe the ears, the snout. This is what it paid attention to. Mostly the snow in the background of the picture. You see, there was bias in the data set that was fed to this algorithm. Most of the pictures of wolves were in snow. So the AI algorithm conflated the presence of absence of snow for the presence or absence of a wolf. The scary thing about this is the researchers had no idea this was happening until they rewrote the algorithm to explain itself. And that's the thing with AI algorithms, deep learning, machine learning. Even the developers who work on this stuff have no idea what it's doing. So that might be a great example from research. But what does this mean in the real world? The Compass criminal sentencing algorithm is used in 13 states to determine criminal recidivism, or the risk of committing a crime again after you're released. ProPublica found that if you're African American, Compass was 77% more likely to qualify you as a potentially violent offender than if you're Caucasian. This is a real system being used in the real world by real judges to make decisions about real people's lives. Why would the judges trust it if it seems to exhibit bias? Well, the reason they use Compass is because it is a model for efficiency. Compass lets them go through caseloads much faster in a backlogged criminal justice system. Why would they question their own software? It's been requisitioned by the state, approved by their ID department. Why would they question it? Well, the people sentenced by Compass have questioned it, and their lawsuits should chill us all. The Wisconsin State Supreme Court ruled that Compass did not deny a defendant due process, provided it was used properly. In the same set of rulings, they ruled the defendant could not inspect the source code of Compass. It has to be used properly, but you can't inspect the source code. This is a disturbing set of rulings when taken together for anyone facing criminal sentencing. Now, you may not care about this because you're not facing criminal sentencing. But what if I told you that black box AI algorithms like this are being used to decide whether or not you can get a loan for your house, whether you get a job interview, whether you get Medicaid, and are even driving cars and trucks down the highway? Would you want the public to be able to inspect the algorithm that's trying to make a decision between a shopping cart and a baby carriage and a self-driving truck, the same way the dog-wolf algorithm was trying to decide between a dog or a wolf? Are you potentially a metaphorical dog who's been misidentified as a wolf by somebody's AI algorithm? Considering the complexity of people, it's possible. Is there anything you can do about it now? Probably not. And that's what we need to focus on. We need to demand standards of accountability, transparency, and recourse in AI systems.
Good. I would agree with that. But as you heard him say, they're already using this, and we're not aware of it. So there's not a human frequently making the decision, but rather an algorithm. Now let's go to our final panelist. Not if, but how artificial intelligence might take over the world, Hugh Bailey.
That you most likely have AI in your pocket at this very moment. Did you know that AI will change the face of this world in the next century? You probably didn't. That's what I'm here to talk to you about today. AI, or artificial intelligence, is defined by John McCarthy of Stanford University as the process of making intelligent machines, specifically intelligent computer machines. This definition does include your phone, your laptop, your computer, this projector, your calculator. AI has become very integral to our society. Think about it. Has any of you heard of Y2K? Y2K was an apocalyptic prediction of from 1999. People believed that once 1999 transferred into 2000s, computers would shut down completely. They couldn't handle this change of date, and thus computers would be wiped out and humans in the process. Does this tell you how vital AI is to our survival? And now AI has come around so quickly, and most people don't really realize it. Here's 1990. In 1990, any country would have less than 25 computers per 100 people. Even the most developed countries didn't have more than 50 computers per 100 people. In 2006, these numbers skyrocketed. Countries had more than 90 computers or even 80 computers per 100 people, and were nearing 100 computers per 100 people. That's one computer per one person in a measly 16 years. This is a huge development in terms of AI. And the reason we're so dependent on it is pretty understandable. On a macro level, governments use this to collect data, store data, and organize their citizens, because in China, we have more than a billion people to manage. That's a huge amount of people, and without AI, we couldn't do this. In America, 300 million, and AI is becoming so vital to our survival. On a micro level, I use computers to study. You might use computers to work. I need my calculator to do math. And it's only becoming more and more important. And so what does this mean? Well, it means that AI really controls us in ways you may not expect. It's also replacing jobs for humans. I'm sure most of you might have seen or used a self-checkout station at a supermarket. And what it does is when you put an item through, it scans and gives you a tally and the price of your groceries. And it doesn't require a human. And they're incredibly advantageous to supermarkets because you can fit a higher concentration of self-checkout stations in a smaller space, and they don't need food, they don't need sleep, they don't have human rights, and they can work 24/7 without getting tired. And so it's way better than human, but they're still limited. They can't react to new situations, they can't clean the floor, they can't answer questions that people need answering. And so we still need humans to be at the supermarket. But what if we didn't? And that's the next level of AI. It's called AGI, or Artificial General Intelligence. Sorry. Artificial General Intelligence is expected to be developed by 2040 and will change the face of this Earth. So now, think about it differently. AGI, as defined by the AGI Society, is artificial intelligence that matches the speed of the human brain or just matches it and mimics the human brain. This means that they can think like us, they can speak like us, they can be creative like us, converse with us just like humans. Think Jarvis. I'll go back to that later. In terms of supermarkets, we could completely wipe humans from the supermarket because if AGI was there, they could react to new situations, they could learn new skills, they could answer questions that people have that people need to have be answered without having been asked them before, been programmed to answer them. This is absolutely huge. And now what this means for us as a society is you might lose your job if you have a if you work at a supermarket, or maybe you have a similar job. And it might sound bad, it might sound like huge unemployment, but it could also mean specialization. A long time ago, maybe thousands, hundreds of thousands of years ago, we started developing tools and started keeping animals in farms. And this means that people wouldn't have to hunt as often and would have these people who didn't have jobs. And so you'd imagine that to be a bad thing. But what that means is they could specialize into new categories and actually accelerate human development and make it more efficient. And this same thing would occur. Hundreds of thousands, even millions of people wouldn't have a job. But this doesn't mean that they would die. This means they would find a new job in a new field and just accelerate human development. And so this is these are huge implications. Another example is the AI butler. Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Facebook, has announced his plans to develop an AI butler for his family similar to Jarvis. This AI butler could recognize faces, could check on the baby, and manage the household at all times. Very useful, but still limited, once again, by what it's been programmed to do. AGI, on the other hand, would change this completely. AGI, in a sense, could recognize new faces and essentially store new data and think in a different manner. For those of you who have seen Iron Man, Jarvis is kind of a witty, funny, with a spice to him that really, you know, everyone loves Jarvis. And when he... spoilers, but when he nearly dies in The Avengers, everyone gets really scared because everybody loves Jarvis, right? And that's what AGI could do. They could actually make jokes and think differently. They could really change this Earth and they could essentially replace humans. But what's holding us back from AGI? Well, first step is hardware. I mentioned that the Tian-2, a supercomputer built in China, just matches the speed of the human brain. That same supercomputer also covers 720 square meters and cost $500 million to build and takes a lot of power. But our brain runs on just 20 watts and is very small. But in 2025, we will have the same processing unit for simply $1,000 in the size of a regular chip. This means AGI could exist on a much grand scale and much more efficiently. This is the first step. The next step, on the other hand, is software, is the thinking process. You can't just think just because it's fast enough. It needs to be able to think like a human. Tim Urban, author of Wait But Why, believes there are three methods to achieving AGI. The first possible method is simply replicating the human brain, copying it like a math test. You're sitting in class and the smart kid's next to you and he's got a way better test than you. You know he's going to do way better than you. In fact, he's already done the test and he's already got 100%. Might as well copy him. That's what we're doing. We're simply copying the brain. But it's not so easy. Brains are tiny neurons and they're much more complex than we might imagine. That's what the next step, the next possible option is replicating evolution. Get a whole ton of computers, give them the same task, whichever two wants to do it better, mash them together, make them a bunch more times, and we're simply doing evolution at a much faster rate. The third option is a bit more weird. Basically, we give AI the ability to code itself. We give it access to all information on artificial intelligence and let it run free. Can I imagine giving a baby a room full of crayons and every artwork ever imagined and saying, make some art? That's essentially what we're trying to do. No one knows which one's going to get there first, but people believe we should be able to reverse engineer the brain by 2030. The real problem is that AGI, it's cool, but it's not that great in comparison to ASI. ASI, or artificial superintelligence, is downright frightening. ASI exceeds intelligence of humans. It can be thousands, hundreds, only double as smart as humans. But even a slight increment increase in intelligence can really just change this Earth. Think about last century. What have we developed? We've developed an MRI, a nuclear bomb. We developed much faster transport mechanisms. Overall, just doubled our lifespan and changed the human race forever in simply a century. Flat screen TVs, computers, AI itself. And so that's in a century. Now, if we doubled the human intelligence, that growth would be exponentially higher. Triple, quintuple, 10 times as fast. And if we make an ASI 10 times as smart, the possibilities are endless. ASI, in a sense, could create immortality or create us extinct. It sounds very science fiction, but it's actually a very real process. Stephen Hawking, I'm sure who many of you know, believes that AI could spell the end of the human race for very good reason. Because once ASI is developed, it's going to exceed us and it's going to have its own goals in mind because it's going to think independently. And if its goals aren't aligned with our own, it could be bad news, real bad news.
More on this on an upcoming program. We have another set of three experts, now that you have an understanding, showing you that some of these systems are actually done today and are being slowly introduced. And I will get to what that means for us, who controls these, and how they will control us. I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you.